Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Well, hey, traveling partners. Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am so glad you're here with us. I'm sitting here with...
I'm Darren Larson.
I'm Tom McGregor.
Tom loved that I said traveling partners.
Gosh, well, you threw us off. I mean, we're all like, what
that's
just
not
happened?
The way you open this thing up.
That's normally, man, it's a new year. I can turn over new leaves.
Look at you.
And just see what happens. But
I'm glad to see you grow, Rex.
Yeah, I know. I'm growing as a human. I'm using my calendar and a reminders list right now.
That's right.
It's fantastic.
I get calendar invites from Rex now. I was like, what is that?
I know. I no longer go through life like a toddler. <It's fantastic. laughs> that has been my goal for that's been like the way I've done it for the past 33 years. It's gone okay, but I'm wondering what'll happen if I do something different. So
it's amazing.
Today we have something special for you. We have two very special guests on our podcast with us. Very special guests. Who are you?
Well, I'm Sarah Dupree.
I'm Jonna Dupree. I'm married to Sarah.
Yeah. Jonna and Sarah were with us on Sunday morning just to talk about the ministry that they are doing. But I don't want to give any spoilers or anything like that. But where do you guys live currently, just for fun?
We're currently in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
That's fantastic. How long have you been there?
I've been there since 2012. And you?
2015. It would be 15, yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well,
it's very cool.
Yeah, we're excited. Jonna and Sarah are two people that we support as a part of Imprint Church. We believe in the ministry that they are doing, and we'll talk a lot about that coming here in just a moment. But we thought we'd let you hear their story and kind of get to know them a little bit more, just so you can pray for them in a more specific way. But
yes, we'll probably cut you off and ask questions too, like at some point in the middle of the thing.
Cool.
Like,
that's fine.
Yeah, what's going on? Like, tell us about that or whatever it is. But yeah,
and they are sharing mic because they're married, and I guess that's what we do with married people.
That's right.
Like that. But yeah, let's start. At the very beginning, where were you guys born? I guess, Sarah, you can go first. Where were you born? And
I was going to say, I wasn't born by the time he was born, but I was born very close by in Seattle. Nice to have a recognizable city when you're filling out forms and you're like, Seattle.
Nice.
Like, not some like little backwater.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not like what is it? There's a like Bucksnort, Tennessee. It's close to where I grew up. That's a real place.
My gosh,
it's a real place.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, but that's when you round up and you go to the closest city. So you're born in Seattle.
Yeah.
And did you grow up here as well?
Yeah. So I grew up here. Grew up going to North Shore Baptist. my parents were always really involved there. So you guys might know Vicky or Brent Boone. I think my aunt and uncle were there many, many years too, the Duffies.
No, I know the Duffies real well. Yeah.
Okay.
They're pretty good people.
Yeah.
I think they're
like
pretty awesome. They're pretty great.
So you grew up around church, you grew up in church, your family was there and involved in serving.
Yeah, so I don't know how many different ministries they were involved at church.
As many as possible.
Over the years. Yeah, my dad... would do worship in kids' church, of the grade school lessons, and gosh, what all was my mom into? But they were always very into the missions program.
Yeah.
So there used to be this little missions fest, and they would do different booths for different countries.
Yeah.
And I don't even think North Shore had people in all of those countries, because our family would... represent Papua New Guinea.
Funny.
We've never been to Papua New Guinea. We don't have any actual connections to Papua New Guinea. But every year we'd make a big flag and like fruit kebabs. Like we'd stick tropical fruits on skewers. I'm sure that's not what they eat at all in Papua New Guinea. Because each booth would have like a snack from the country. So people who had actually been to the countries there.
They knew what to do.
Had pretty legit snacks, and we had these little.
I guess this
skewers.
Was like pre-Wikipedia, so you can like
for sure. But I always and Missions Fest grew and grew, and I think it grew into the Missions Fest that is, or I don't know.
Oh,
what
the
they
Seattle wide
now.
One.
Yes.
Oh, funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was North Shores that grew out of hand.
Cool. Yeah.
It just grew and grew. So I'm really proud of like what they started. Because yeah, it definitely sparked my imagination. And like my mom and dad had read like mission stories, like cool. Heroes of the Faith series, or like YWAM has that series,
mm-hmm. yeah,
for especially for kids. And so I got it in my head. Like, it would be really cool to go to Papua New Guinea and live in a treehouse. And then as I got older and like realized like there are more aspects to the world, I found out Papua New Guinea had over 800 languages on half an island.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's a ridiculous amount of languages in one place. So I like, oh, like they would need Bible translators. And then this other thing happened where if you're a little tiny short kid and you tell these adults that you want to be a Bible translator in Papua New Guinea, they get these really big eyes. And they're like, wow, you're so, like, that's so amazing. Right. So I'm sure for many, many years I was saying it just because of the great attention.
Yeah, the eye contact, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I had been saying that for years, and I thought it would be pretty cool. Like, I was genuinely interested in, you know, thought that's what God wanted me to do with my life. And so a recruiter, a Wycliffe recruiter, got a hold of me.
Amazing.
In
of course
high
they
school.
Did.
Yeah. They're so good at that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like the Army.
I think, yeah. It's very, very close. In high school, they had me go to this, like, crash course in linguistics to see if I would actually like to do that
kind
of
cool.
thing.
Man.
And I loved it.
How old were you at the time?
That was the end of high school.
Okay, so you're like 17, 18.
So, yeah, I think I was maybe 16. And I had gone on a couple short-term missions trips.
Like regional places?
Like Mexico and the Philippines.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so this must have been, I was probably 16.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gave me an idea of like, well, I should study some linguistics so that I can do this properly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So I went off to did an undergrad in linguistics. How far through, am I telling my whole backstory before I met you or what?
Yeah, sure.
How about you tell
yeah.
yours until you meet him and then we'll pause
and we'll
get
up.
His
yeah.
and then we'll combine.
It'll be
together.
Cinematic. Yeah. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So like throughout university, like there had been like times in my life, like, so I'm studying linguistics to be a Bible translator, but like, you know, like the grandparents are really hoping, I think at one point, one of them was like, but after this, you're going to get a real job, right? So I think there was a while where I said, you know, you could become a speech pathologist and they make lots of money. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And then I did, I noticed something, like anytime I tried to pursue linguistics and something like linguistics and TESOL so I could like mm-hmm. have a job and make
yeah.
money,
yeah.
it like went very poorly. Huh. Like I hated all the classes. They were so stressful. I applied to this program even after I got the certification. That was the year there was the tsunami in Japan
yeah.
and like all mm-hmm. of the programs yeah. I had applied to like closed down. Mm-hmm. So it just wasn't working. It wasn't working. And then there was another period of my life where I was like, oh, I should try to make money or something. So
I guess I got to live.
But then it didn't work out. Like that's mm-hmm. anytime I start
down a path towards something else.
Especially TESOL.
Yeah,
teaching
TESOL
English
in particular.
As a second
yeah.
language
yeah, yeah.
is not my calling, and it's definitely not like it's like the canary in the coal mine. Mm. Like I'm going down the wrong path if I'm
thinking about
pursuing TESOL.
Yeah.
But that's just for me. For some people, it's like it's very
yeah. Some people love
fulfilling.
It.
So, where did you go to university, and what is linguistics different than choosing a certain area of like, you know, I'm gonna be a TESOL teacher. I'm gonna tell us that real quick.
Yeah, I went to school up in British Columbia,
okay.
in Canada. So, yeah. If you're studying linguistics, probably the first question people tend to ask is how many languages do you speak? And it's Jono accidentally asked my supervisor how many languages she's spoken
She said, what do you mean by speak?
So we like to
okay, I'm not asking that again.
So we say it's kind of like a, like if you ask a doctor how many diseases they have. Like that's not what we do.
It's not the same thing.
It's not about learning individual languages or like having like a body count of languages that you've learned.
Linguistics is like what we used to call philology, and you're studying semiotics
how it
and all
works.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so you're studying the structure of language. So linguistics is the science of language. So there's the science of how you're producing language, how you actually produce sounds, and which sounds other speakers will perceive as speech sounds versus like a type sound. I don't know.
And those change culture to culture, right? I mean, every culture.
So each culture will have their own sounds that they perceive as distinctive or necessary. Each language is going to have its own grammar, because there was a good chunk of history where people thought you have your civilized countries and languages and then your uncivilized languages.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not true languages. But it turns out that they have fully developed grammars, vocabularies, like
that's
just as complicated.
Would
as
that
any.
Be like Koine Greek versus classical Greek? Is that how
so
you
that would be, people would think that English or the Romance languages have written grammars. They have grammar. Some tribal languages not going to have a full grammar.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like also the dawn of anthropology, where people were realizing, no, actually, you have all of these intricate social connections and networks. Like just because you're in a tribe doesn't mean you're not.
Yeah.
Sophisticated and civilized.
Yeah.
It just means it might not be written down.
Yeah.
So it's just not written down, but there is a full,
there's a whole
intricacy.
Yeah. The structure is there, whether it's like formalized or not.
Yeah.
But it's there. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in linguistic even spans to how people use languages. So there's a lot of, even in a single language, you're going to get a lot of different dialectal differences or differences in how men and women speak or ought to use language.
Makes sense.
If you have a different occupation, you're probably going to get different technical jargon.
So you go to university and you study that. I guess you occasionally try the TESOL thing and you hit a brick wall every time. After you get done with university, what's your plan from there? Do we miss any important life events?
No,
in university,
so that was my plan was to try to pay off student loans.
Right. Yep. That's a good plan.
Seems like a really good idea.
That's a noble
just
cause.
Like about a month from graduation, my dad was in contact with his friend from university who was in Nepal. And he said, oh, your daughter's studying linguistics. You should send her over to see if she could like do an internship here. And so we're like, yeah, sure. Like, I should do that. He was like, send her over before she joins any organization because they take way too long. Like, the onboarding is way too long. So I went and checked it out for a month or so. I had a pretty interesting experience. Yeah, just for that month. I had maybe my first pretty obvious, like, kind of headbutt with, like, spiritual pushback. Something about me, like, my entire life is I love it when the power goes out. I love it. It was always so much fun when the power would go out and we had to do things by candlelight.
Yeah, that's why you like flashlights.
I love flashlights, and my baby loves flashlights. It's so funny.
It's because she secretly turns off the lights all the time.
And I remember getting really down a couple weeks while I was there, and they have load shedding. They were dealing with a really bad, not embezzlement, corruption where electricity was being shunted to these companies rather than the general population. Mm. And there was one day that I was like, oh, like, I hate it when the power goes out. I should just go home and, like, get a real job. Like, I should just go home. I'll just be a cashier back in Washington somewhere. And then I was like, wait a second. Like, what did I just say to myself? I hate it when the power goes out? Like, wait a second. You. And then I was thinking back to all of these, like, negative thoughts I'd been telling myself and realized, like how I'd never noticed like intrusive thoughts before. Mm-hmm. And it was just the most bizarre experience.
Yeah.
And like after that moment, I don't think I've had another moment where I doubted that I was supposed to be doing what I'm doing with linguistics with Wycliffe. Yeah. So that was
that was spiritual warfare. I mean, that's kind of what you put a name to that, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what it felt like to you?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Because it was so obviously not who I am.
Yeah.
So it was, I'm glad it was so obvious in that moment.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Like this is something like I know about myself. And then it's like the exact opposite. Like they chose the wrong sentence.
Yeah. They gave themselves away.
Come on. So in 2011, that was the year I joined Wycliffe. It's been a while now.
Cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so at first I got to work with, I was doing some language survey where I got to help ask questions to figure out where exactly languages are spoken, like one dialect versus another, because if you're going to translate something, you want to make sure that you're using a dialect that is either central or people respect it, or you might find out that you need to have two distinct translations because they're socially different enough that you need to treat it as two different languages. So I got to hike all around for that. Something Jono and I have realized about ourselves is that we're not big on trekking. We're not big on hiking.
Multi-day hikes now.
So it's funny to look back on that time of life and be like, why did we do that? I've got some really cool pictures of like just the mountain, like the Himalayas.
Was this still in Nepal then when you were doing this? Okay, yeah. Well, you don't really have an option in a lot of places in Nepal then, because not like you can't take a taxi.
Even the taxis, you just feel like you're gonna die, and they're pointing out the other cars that have gone over.
Look
like
at that guy!
Oh my gosh.
He's gone.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. So then I also got to work with one language in particular because they were trying to figure out just how closely related is this to another project that is currently going. So that project is still on my heart a bit, and they're going to be in the training group that I get to teach in May.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
I'm so excited to be a part of that. So I was in and out of Nepal until 2015. So probably 2014, I realized like I need more training myself to be doing this job, because I was starting to get to the edge of what I knew or how to deal with language, because there's so many different aspects to it. And so I applied for this school in Thailand for a master's degree program. And then I had a little bit of time left. You can only get a certain amount of tourist visa a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was going to use that up, and then I was going to go to this school in Thailand. And in April 2015, there was a really big earthquake. Netflix has done a documentary on it now. So if you watch...
We sent a...
Aftershock.
The church I was a part of in Portland sent a missionary to Nepal a month before
earthquake. Brutal.
It was like brutal. And you guys were in Nepal at the time?
Yeah.
How did you navigate that?
Well, I was really, really annoyed. I was waiting until...
Because the power went out? I'm just kidding. Oh, gosh. No, you're like, yes, the power's out. Yeah, yeah.
The power was out. We were one of the last places in the town, in the city to get power back. Our power was out for like a week.
Oh, man.
But the water was gone.
Oh, yeah.
And I was waiting till that morning to take a shower and like do my laundry, and then I didn't get it done before. So
oh,
I was
no.
really like,
oh, no.
really, really annoyed. So the earthquake was on a Saturday, which is the day people would go to the temple or have church.
Mm. Oh,
so,
gosh.
It was daytime as well, so a lot of people were outside of buildings. So that was a blessing. Huh. It was Saturday, so the markets were a little...
Things were just rubble. I mean, it was like destroyed.
Yes. Yeah. If you think of like these five-story brick buildings, some of our friends realized... that their contractor had skimped on mortar and none of the interior walls had mortar between the bricks.
Oh my gosh.
There's
oh,
so many.
And you
mad.
Find out when it is it
yeah.
falls.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
The place I was staying, our landlords were very paranoid people. They wouldn't let us leave the clotheslines up overnight in case somebody just like a thief was going to like use the clothesline to climb the outside of the building to get to the roof. I don't know. They were very paranoid, but that they was great because when they built it, they had poured their foundation double thick.
Mm. Okay.
And we didn't have a crack
oh,
in
wow.
that building.
Gosh.
It was
okay.
a very safe building. She was out of the country. So I decided there were so many aftershocks. Like I was seasick the first day.
Mm-hmm.
I was so tired of like waking up. Like I didn't want to bother waking up and running out of the house each time. So I just like dragged my mattress out and stuck it under the table and just slept.
That's a lot of faith in the infrastructure yeah. of that building,
yeah.
by the way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just such a hassle.
Yeah.
It's just such a hassle. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
No, all of my Pacific Northwest training kicked in.
Yeah.
And I
had a few earthquakes around here.
I tried to hide in a doorway, but it was like a fake doorway.
Oh, okay.
Real, like they don't have framing around
yeah.
their doorways. It's like this like mortar
yeah,
facade.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Such a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to renew. I had not brought enough money the previous time I had to renew my visa. So I had to, I wasn't able to get like 3 months at a time. I had to like do month and month by month. Mm. I was really annoyed at myself for that too. So I had to renew my visa the Tuesday after, so Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, like 3 days after the main earthquake. And there's still a lot of
aftershocks. Yeah.
And so I went to immigration, and I didn't realize till afterwards, they let me keep my bike helmet on through the entire process. I think you're supposed to remove... You know, any coverings, because they got to prove it's
here.
That
was too.
Like official document.
Yeah.
Bike helmet on.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So.
Like
immigration
officer's like, I'm not sure that's you. Can you put this helmet on real quick for me just to have a look? Just to make sure.
Oh,
you seem
goodness.
Dedicated to safety. I like that.
Oh,
is that
man.
A religious thing, your bike
oh,
helmet?
My goodness.
There you go. That's, you don't have to take it off.
And I kept... So I was in line at immigration, and I was talking to the guy behind me because he was just so nervous. And I was like trying to like calm him down a bit, and I kept accidentally looking further back in line. And there was this group of people. I was kind of hoping they were like relief workers. They looked like relief workers because they're pretty cheerful. You had people coming in from all over the world. To help, and so the people who had been there through the earthquake were, like, deathly afraid.
Uh-huh.
And then you get this group of people, turns out to be a YWAM DTS.
Nice.
Just with these big smiles on their face. And I just accidentally kept making eye contact with this
accidentally.
Guy.
Right.
Scoping out the hot dude.
Oh, man. Yeah. He had a really good smile. And I just, you know, accidentally.
And my buddy was there, like, she looked at you again, bro. She did it again.
Oh, man. I just kept doing it. It was so
meanwhile, you're wearing a bike helmet.
Yeah. It was not a nice bike helmet.
This ugly backpack because it fit my computer, so I bought it, but it was like this
and
black
if I'm making,
and orange.
And am I doing the addition right? You hadn't quite done all your laundry or taken a shower
yeah,
in a while.
Showered.
Like, you're just
nobody
like...
has, so it's fine.
hadn't showered in like a week. I wasn't wearing any makeup. I was a mess.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
But the government building had like these chains of power cords because they were the only building with a generator going. So everybody was charging everything. And so we got talking about the electricity. Somehow
and sparks started flying.
Oh, that was so bad, Rex.
Wow.
So bad.
Wow.
That's why I'm here.
Okay, so pause your story now. Let's
Jono
hear.
Has entered Jono, the chat.
Yeah, let's go back and just hear a bit of your story, Jono. Tell us where you're from and what brought you up
from your
that
accent.
Moment.
I'm going to guess Kentucky.
Texas,
close. But further south.
Okay.
So I'm from South Africa.
Okay.
The actual South.
The actual South, the Southern Hemisphere.
Nice.
So I say that with American accent. It's as American
South
as
Africa.
I can get.
Yes.
South Africa. So I'm from South Africa, born in Johannesburg. Nice. A small little
tiny place.
Yeah. No one's heard of it. I knew I was going to be a missionary since I was 8 years old.
Wow.
How did you know that?
You guys had the same story. Like, you had some feeling of that too. It's amazing. Yep.
Yeah, when I heard her, I was like, me too.
Yeah.
You know, so I was
Wait, did you
cricket.
Talk about Papua New Guinea as well?
And not that specific. Okay. I had no clue where.
Yeah.
Yeah, no clue where. Huh. Have you ever been to PNG?
No, I don't need to anymore. Okay. I've seen enough giant centipedes.
Yeah, that'll do it.
She would be totally let down when she realized they don't have fruit on a stick.
I know.
So like, this is lame.
Can't live in a treehouse.
Can't go here again.
So I was 8 years old playing cricket at a church camp, right?
Okay.
And playing cricket, I was just behind the wickets, and I was sitting there standing, looking at these grown-ups, and I was like, I think I'm going to be a missionary one day. And that's
playing
about
cricket.
Did it just enter your head?
It just entered my head.
Bolts of lightning?
Yeah, it's like it was a wonderful day, sunny. Yep, the Lord was speaking to me.
That's great.
The wind
great.
Was blowing. That's
when
voice.
The Lord speaks and the sun is shining in my experience.
So I was like, I was listening. I was just like, did Lord, I think that might have been the Lord. So I went and I prayed later. I told my dad. My dad prayed with me and he's like, yeah, I feel like that's right.
That's
and
awesome.
So my brain was set for the rest of my life
that's
to be
amazing.
A missionary.
Wow. Yeah, so you also were born into a Christian family.
Oh yeah, I was born. I knew my dad, not my mom, but my dad. He knew he was going to be a missionary too.
Okay,
he knew he's going to be a missionary. And so, fast forward many years later, my dad, God speaking to him to go into missions. Actually, God told him, "You go." Then I will show you. He's like, no, Lord, you have to show me. Then I'll go. He's like, I said, no.
It's the Abraham
go.
Thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then that's what the Lord showed, right? So my dad then God said to my dad and to me, give everything away. Now, my dad was very well off. And he had to give everything away. That was rough.
Mm.
I hated when he had to give away my computer.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was rough. I wanted to keep my computer.
Yeah.
He wanted to keep his mattress.
Yeah.
And his car.
Yeah.
And God's like, no, give it away. So
give it all away.
Gave it away. Household, everything.
Okay, so wait, your dad's not South African.
He's South African.
He is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we've been there since 1652. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A long while.
So right. You're
not me. I'm right. Younger than that.
You're not a vampire.
With my family.
That's where all the vampires are at. Yeah. Okay. So your dad, you're with your dad and you're supposed to give everything away. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So we gave everything away and we started walking. Just backpacking to Africa from, we're South African and we call the rest of Africa Africa.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. So this would be the end of your high school,
age right 18. Off when I was 19, 19, I was about to turn 20. We started walking.
Okay.
Backpacks. We had too much on our backpacks the beginning.
And then you were happy to give some stuff away after that.
We had. Books. My dad's like, I need this book. And he's like stacking books into my backpack.
I'd be
it's
like
too
McGregor
heavy for him.
If he went backpacking.
Yeah. We were like, no, this is too heavy. So we just start blessing people with these books.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So we didn't. There was no we didn't have iPads or tablets or anything at the time. It was 2002.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we started backpacking, And in the first week, we shared the gospel with more people than the whole year before that, because you're walking, you're just hanging out with people, and they're asking you what you're doing, and we're sharing the gospel, and they're asking you, oh, can you please come here, meet my family, tell them the same thing, over and over. Cool. And now, to go a little bit back before that, which is just to show how cool God is. God is really, he's fantastic and training his people too. Before that, when God said, give everything away, we wanted to go ask for support, right? Mm-hmm. And God's like, no. I remember stepping out, and God said, no, you will not ask for support. You will learn to trust me. Mm-hmm. We're like, what is this? So we thought, no, can't be the Lord. So we went and did it anyway. And people got angry at us, like, oh, this is not how God works. And we're like, okay, Lord, we'll listen to you. We're like, okay, we'll do this. We'll just go. So we stepped out, right? For the whole first 6 years, never asked anyone for support. We started with $300, no income. God kept providing the most ridiculous ways. Like, people would just ask us to stay places. People would gave us a car, and then later on another car, a Land Cruiser, exactly what we were, trusting the Lord for, so we can have like Jesus film equipment and stuff. Gave us speakers, like these massive speakers. Now you don't need those big ones anymore because we have better technology.
Yeah.
But God is amazing. He knows how to provide for his people.
Yeah.
And so that's how he taught us. My dad, who was very like businessman, you have to support, you know, you provide money
Make
for yourself.
Make a plan, do this, yeah.
So this isn't his temperament at all.
No. No. Before that, he camped twice in his life. He hated both times. And now God's like, no, you go.
And he was wealthy and self-sustained, I imagine.
Before that,
like,
he was
very like ready to go.
He had everything, right? And then God's like, no, you learn to trust me.
Okay, can I time out really quick?
Oh, yeah.
In America, a lot of people don't have the experience or understanding of hearing from God. God doesn't speak to, they think God doesn't speak to them. And you're very like flippantly saying God is speaking all the time and saying all sorts of things. So can you help people that maybe are in that boat understand what do you mean by God told us and we obeyed because God told
That's
us?
That's a cool story, yeah. Yep.
So what I have found that many times when God speaks, he speaks in different ways because he is very creative. Mm-hmm. He's extremely creative. The more we do spend time listening to him and just trying to hear what he has to say, the more you start to recognize it. But what it sounds like is this. Many times you're like, Lord, I have this problem here. Something's happening. I need to hear a voice. And when there are times where, like for instance, this one time we were stuck in the middle of nowhere. Like, Lord, okay, we need a lift. We need to get somewhere. We're walking on this one dusty road. Actually, it was in a desert. We were walking in the desert, and we forgot water that day. Anyway, long story. So we're walking on there. We're like, Lord, we need help. We need help. And while we're walking, we're desperate. Now we're getting desperate. And we found that whenever we're desperate, we're more likely to hear God's voice, right?
That's a good word.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we were like, Lord, we're getting desperate. I mean, my lips were cracking that same day. I was like, what? Okay, Lord, we need your help. We look back and we're like, Lord, we need there to be a car, right? We need to see a car coming. And this one car was coming and we're like, yes, this one. And my dad felt, he said, not this one. And I was like, really? What? So I keep quiet.
Any car, Lord. Any car.
So I'm keeping quiet. I'm like, okay. And I start feeling like this is off. There's something off. Like, not peace. Like, it's hard to explain. But the more you spend time with the Lord, the more you start recognizing that. Mm-hmm. So I'm like waiting. So I'm like, okay, Dad, you may be right about this. Right. You may be right about this. So we continue. And the car drives by. We're like, okay, yeah, the Lord was right about that. Later on, we were praying like, Lord, please, in Jesus' name, let there be like a car to pick us up because we're desperate. We need water. We're so parched, Lord. Help us. And we're walking. It felt like, look back. We look back, there was nothing. Like, okay. My dad's like, we look back. And after a while, we see in the mirage, because it's now, it looks like this.
Yeah, heat waves.
Desert.
Yeah, the desert.
We see there's a car coming and we go, okay, this is the one. So we feel like, okay, this is the one. So we literally stood in front of the road, like waiting. And here comes this road. There's this car, and they actually pass us. And we go, Lord, that's the one. You told us. That's the one. And we're like, okay, well, we might have missed it. And we keep walking. And we see the lights stop, and they come back. and it was two Muslims and a nice guy in the back, like full Muslim gear. We get into the car, they put our backpacks in there, they put it into the car, and we feel, okay, we have to share the gospel. It's just like, huh. It's hard to explain. It's like a prompt, like someone's like poking uh-huh. your shoulder, do it now, uh-huh. right? It's hard to explain. So we start sharing the gospel. And the whole way, my dad, he's a talkative one. He has a very long, he's very long-winded, right, sweetie? He's very long-winded. I love
it. She's very silent when you said he's the talkative one.
Yeah, so. Yeah. He talks way more than I do.
Sometimes he can be quite quiet.
Sometimes, yeah. Mm. So anyway, he's talking,
Sing
telling
wallflower.
The. So he's sharing the gospel, like, and the, at the back, this one guy with this nice jacket on. As all Africans, they get out the car after a little while, and he says, "Thank you so much. I've been praying for someone to share the gospel with my two brothers. I've been a Christian for 6 months, and everybody's too afraid to share the gospel with them."
Oh my gosh.
And so it's like God was stopping us from getting into the cars that mm-hmm. would have helped us. I mean, we were desperate and needed water and Coke or something, yeah. right? We yeah. needed something. And so God stopped us because he wanted us to preach to these two guys, mm-hmm. right? Now, we have seen it happen many times. It's hard. It's like I've heard Christians say, you feel peace, right? Sometimes that feels more like an emotional thing. But there's this one time I was in Djibouti, and we knew we were supposed to cross over to Yemen. And we have to deliver Bibles. We knew we had to. Before we did, right? That was years later. Before we did, I can't. So when they say a peace that surpasses all understanding, I felt that. It was like, I feel good about this. Hmm. Yeah. So we get on this. We had a car and the trailer at that time, and we had hidden compartments for Bibles because we were planning to go to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
and.
That's not okay.
Kosher.
That's allowed. Dangerous.
It's not allowed. Yeah, not allowed.
It's yeah. definitely not kosher. Yeah. So it's not allowed, right? So we're about to do this, and we get everything ready. We get the visas ready, and we had this piece, right? We knew we had this piece. So we put our car, it's a Land Cruiser, and a trailer on top of a dhow. Now, when we did that, we saw that on top of the grain, everything. I parked our car on top of all of the stuff that they're transporting to sell on the other side. On the way there, we see the ship captain. Like every now and then, he comes out and he looks left and right, almost nervous looking. Like, and we asked one of their people, "Hey, why does the captain keep doing it?" He says, "Oh, he's just checking to see if there's a storm because last week, a boat tipped, capsized. Yikes. A dhow. It's called a dhow. Capsized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right." And they're like, "Okay." So how heavy is this one? Oh, it's supposed to handle 800 tons, and we loaded it with 2,000 tons of stuff. So we're like, okay, no wonder he's nervous. Now we're nervous, okay?
Yeah.
Before we get in there.
Bibles, whatever.
I know. My life. Right? Yeah. I've seen videos like those same boats at the same area capsizing, mm-hmm. right? It's scary. So before we got into Yemen, a boat came. And two officials came up and they arrested us, me and my dad.
Oh, man.
Huh. In Yemen. Now, this was 2005, and Yemen, Aden, the Aden city, we were there. It's, that was Al-Qaeda capital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, we were stupid.
Yeah.
And we get there.
But you had a peace, though.
We had peace.
Yeah.
So, we had peace, and we get there, and they started interrogating us for a week. They put us in prison, interrogated us every single day, me and my dad. At that time, my dad started getting all sad, and he's like looking at me, his son's like, "Jono,
what have I done?
What have I done?" Sure. My dad. So he plays it like he always says, "You know what? I felt sad about my son." He's like, "No," but how he actually did it was like, "Jono, you're like, I've had a long," he literally said these words, "I've had a long life. You've had a short one. Let's help you escape," right?
Yeah.
I said, "No, Dad, just stay here together. Remember, we felt the peace. We felt the peace. Let's just continue with this." Finally, some people in South Africa, they bought a ticket for us, and they helped us get our car and everything off. So the peace was because, not for us to travel through where our plans was.
Yep.
The peace was that God was going to be with us no matter what.
Yeah.
And he got out. So he spoke to us, and we had an idea. God is blessing our plan for this, but God's message at that time was, I'm with you.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we misunderstand what God wants to say.
Yeah.
And
that's a good word.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How far? So you left South Africa. How many countries did you hit on your way up Africa?
Up to Africa? Oh, not sure. I can't remember. So I've been to every country in Africa on the South, Central, Eastern, and Northeastern.
That's amazing. Sharing the gospel. How many years did it take?
I continued. So I joined YWAM 2009, and after that, I was like, man, I like backpacking still, sharing the gospel. I'm going to continue doing this until...
Well, YWAM does that.
I was like, even YWAMers were like, yeah, they like to join a base, and they like to do things. I wanted to just keep moving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is amazing.
So I was a backpacking missionary for about 10 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm. Straight. I would go back to South Africa for like 3 weeks and then head out again.
Yeah.
Just to say hi to family and then leave again.
Okay, before we finish your story, what is your dad doing now? Where's he at?
He's in Chiang Mai. He lives like 15-minute drive from my house.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. Yeah. And he is in charge of outreach teams. Like,
because of course he is. Why would he not be?
Actually, here's a funny thing. He's got a motorcycle that's been trapped in Mongolia since COVID.
Oh man. Oh my gosh.
And he's on his way back there in June, July, and he's going to get his on his motorcycle and drive through Mongolia. Sweet. Actually, what he did was he drove down to Malaysia, shipped his bike to Vladivostok, Siberia, drove through Siberia, went down to Mongolia. He's 60 something.
Speaking of Netflix, this is like what you and McGregor.
This is a thing.
Long way round.
Long way up.
That's my dad.
Look like a Disney princess.
It really
movie.
Does. Yeah.
Their story
they had
a whole crew.
They had a crew of cameras.
My dad's awesome. He's going back to go to the stands.
Huh. You know? That's awesome.
Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Pakistan.
Wow.
Sweet. Yeah.
So I guess a little bit back to McGregor's thing, when you're hearing God's voice, you're thinking, well, Lord, I want to serve you. I'm going to try to do that. Mm. And as you go, you're just following the prompts of the Spirit and trusting that God will be with you as you go.
Yeah. It's almost like you get a green light.
That makes sense.
It's like you get a green light for things. Okay.
But it's a green light for stuff that doesn't necessarily add up.
There have been times that my logic would say, no, don't do this. But inside, I have a green light to do something. It's like, but Lord, this is illogical.
Yeah.
Those are often the easiest times to know that this is God speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I hear is you're cultivating a relationship with a person.
Yeah.
And you are speaking in faith and listening with the intention to respond.
Yeah, and obey.
I think often people don't hear what God is saying because there isn't either the intention to respond with obedience or it's you're not saying what I actually want you to say.
Yes.
So I'm not going to listen to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I want to know if I should date the cheerleader.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I want to take this high paying job.
Should I take a cool job or
So you guys are like the most interesting people in the world.
Yeah, it seems that way.
I'm gonna catch us up a little bit here, so we can hear a little bit more about what you're doing now. Let me just ask first. You were on were you in the leadership on the DTS when you were in Nepal and you ran into her?
Okay, I was leading the team.
I was wondering if you were.
Yeah, I was leading
because you had
team.
Joined YWAM already and you were helping DTS.
Yeah, I was the DTS leader, and then I was leading this outreach. And I was this earthquake happened. Now it's a funny thing. I've been dreaming of being part of a disaster. A natural disaster for a long time, right?
Why would you not? That makes total sense to me.
I was like, so when it happened, I was
excited.
You're
the dude that hiked across Africa, so why would I not want to go to a disaster zone?
I was like, yes! So I sent my dad a message. I'm like, Dad, there was a big earthquake. This is crazy. Then he says, awesome! And he sends me this Like 20 things to do if there's a zombie apocalypse.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
My dad, he's like, yeah, you're lucky, bro.
Man. Yeah.
So I was, yeah, my whole team, we have like different stories of how when the earthquake happened, one of our team members was at this coffee shop. She opened the door. The earthquake happened. The glass shattered, like big chunks of glass. And her arm was supposed to be cut multiple times. Not one scratch. Man. She was just the completely protected. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And many stories like that. Instantly after the earthquake, my like disaster relief, even the disaster relief training at one point in Salem, Oregon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I was like, I was ready for this. Immediately, I was like, okay, we have to get water. We have to get
I'm doing this.
Cans. Yeah. Like so many we bought sardines.
Oh, we interesting.
Bought, I so many sardines. Cans of sardines.
Sardines.
Oh, yeah. It's an oily fish, you know?
Yeah. So we so many cans of tuna and sardines that my team members like, why? Yeah. I'm like, because.
Because disaster relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's what they had, a water.
So how does your team end up then in the government building, you know, looking at the girl with the bicycle helmet? Yeah.
Glenn Sharon a week.
Yeah. So before we even went on this outreach, right? We were praying, and one of the ladies said to us, I feel like we're planning on going to Nepal for 2 weeks and then go to India, right? And a lady from Korea, she was praying, and she said, I feel like your plan, something big is going to happen. Like, she wrote this down, and she prayed for us. Like, something big is going to happen. You're going to have to change your plans, right? And she said, something big is going to happen. And so we wrote that down. We're like, okay, keeping this in mind. Let's put it on the shelf. It may or may not happen, right? So we're at in Nepal getting ready to leave to go to India, and the earthquake happens. And we realize, we have to extend our visa. Because the Lord said to us, we felt like the Lord saying, no, you stay and help.
Wait here.
Stay and help, right? I mean, we want to serve on outreach, right? That's why we go on outreach. We want to serve. We want to help. We want to tell people about Jesus, right? And we want to serve because we want to tell them about the Lord, because the Lord loves them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to immigration, and our whole team is just is excited because the whole night before and the days before, we've been practicing. I had them rehearse, if there's an aftershock, where do you run to? And there are a whole lot of places with bookshelves with books, and then the bathtub, and like they will lie down in different places. Right? I was like, this is what we do.
They were hyped.
We were excited.
We're prepared for this.
These were not like smiles, there are maniacal grins that you're seeing.
Dane, the guy who said, hey, bro, she's looking at you again. That guy, he said, Jono, you're enjoying this way too much. I was like, I should tone it down a bit. Yeah. So,
So you guys, eye contact, that kind of thing. Yeah. You guys start talking.
Yeah. So she's in front of me, and I see this guy next to her. I'm like, she could do better than that. and I start talking. She started talking to me for a while. She keeps looking at me, and my buddy's like, look. And then finally we start talking, and I'm trying to contextualize, I'm in America. So we're talking, right? So she's talking, and then I realize, I hope she's a missionary, because I like this girl. She's pretty. And so I start talking to my team members about YWAMI things and Christian things. And I'm hoping she would hear.
Like, just really loudly.
Really loudly, right? But not so loud.
Do you know Jesus? Oh, you do? Oh, good.
You know how cool God was last night? She didn't hear a thing, right? Not one word of that. But we started talking, and we finally, I ignored my whole team, which is, I'm the team leader, and I was ignoring my team,
totally,
getting a visa. So we finally get to the front. She gets her visa, hands in her passport, and then I wait and hand in mine. And I go to line again. We're chatting again. We get to the front. She gets her passport. She's like, okay, I got it. And there she goes.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I'm like seeing this girl go, and I'm like, looking at the guys behind the counter. I'm like, I'm willing, like looking at them, give me my passport now, right? I want my passport. So they hand me my passport, and I book it. My team members made fun of me later. I ran to the door, and by the time I got to the door, I acted like I'm coolly walking. Like, chill.
Naturally.
Right? She took her time with her bicycle and everything, right?
Nice.
And there we found out that she's coming to Chiang Mai.
You guys were based in Chiang Mai.
And I was based in Chiang Mai. And we had the same friends, like Jim Randall, right? We're not the same person at all.
That's funny.
We both have friends in Chiang Mai who's been to Myanmar multiple times, who has the same name.
I didn't know you know the Randalls. I know the Randalls really well. I met them in Myanmar. So.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I know the Randalls
the
really well.
The 60-year-old one or the
younger one? No, the younger one. Okay. One of the Jesus Storybook Bibles. Have you met them? They're from Blaine?
Jim and Brianna.
Jim and Brianna.
Yeah, well, I love them.
He knows my Jim Randall.
He knows yours.
Not your Jim Randall.
Yeah.
We love the Randalls. I love the Randalls. I'm grateful for them. Yeah.
They're awesome.
They live in Chiang Mai right now.
They do.
Have you connected with them recently?
Oh, I've been so busy having a
party. My mind is blown right now.
That's awesome. That is insane.
Yeah. Please say hi.
She's my roommate in university.
Surprise.
It's a small world. I'm losing my mind. They brought me down and we went to the Golden Pagoda in Myanmar and hung out there and did all the things.
No way. We're going to talk after.
We should talk afterwards. Because we got to finish you guys' story.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Because otherwise people are going to start hanging up on our podcast. So we want to hear the rest of your story.
No way.
So,
he knows my Jim Randalls.
Yeah, I know. So after the earthquake, we like earthquakes now.
Evidently, because
of an earthquake. It's wonderful. Yeah, she's my earthquake crush.
That is so cool.
So then after 2 months, I came to Chiang Mai and he picked me up at the airport.
Yes, I did.
And we got to know each other for 6 months. And then I was trying to figure out, like, am I a guy? Because, like, every other guy God's been like, nah, not this one.
No.
Kind of like the car.
They're like Tesla. Yeah. Yeah.
like Tesla.
Not this one. Yeah. And, yeah, funny side note to the listening to what God is telling you. One of the pieces of advice I was given, you can't hear God clearly, go back to the time when you did hear him clearly last. Very clearly, it was the verse about doing your taxes. And I was overdue with my taxes.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to do my. So, like, I knew, like, crap, I've got to do this old paperwork. And then I'll hear from God about this issue. But I got to go, like, get my affairs in order.
That's so funny.
That's crazy. Because
you can get lots of extensions if you're overseas.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
So I was just putting it off. And,
yeah.
And that one where he, like, pulls the.
Yeah, the coin out of the fish. Uh-huh.
Go pay your taxes.
Uh-huh. Oh. So you went fishing and.
That's amazing. Found the gold coin.
And then it was like I kept expecting like for the green light, red light analogy. I kept expecting a red light and it never arrived. So I brought him back to meet my family and everybody kept giving us green lights.
Yeah.
I think Hilario was the one who roasted you the most.
He's everybody the only else, one who roasted me.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody else was
if
like,
if you've been roasted by Hilario,
family.
you're part of the family.
Yeah.
Oh, I know Hilario.
Yeah.
Missed them awesome. Dearly. They decided to move overseas.
So, yeah. I was he was the only one. It's like, he was trying to invite her to go to Spain at one point. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. He's like, yo, you're not part of family.
No. Like, okay. I know her. I don't know you.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So you guys got married, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean,
in Washington.
You got married here in Washington. You said you've been married for 6 years, is that right?
Yeah, 2016.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
Coming up on 7, yeah.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what's ministry now? Are you going to ask that?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
What are you doing? You guys... Give us a quick overview of this, of ministry and what you're doing and how we can be praying for you and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like, joke that we've got an intercultural relationship, not because... He's South African and I'm American because he's YWAM and I'm Wycliffe. And they attract two very different personality types.
Yeah.
How did you put it? Like,
but we just get the extroverts, the stupid people, and they just go without thinking. They get they think everything through.
There you go.
Very well.
That I'm so glad that you said that as a YWAMer because that is. Incredibly accurate.
Yeah, that's true.
But I can't say that because I'm no longer a YWAMer. Yeah, yeah. I was at one point and I could have said that.
Yep.
It's like picking on your family. You can do that, but no one else can.
Yeah,
so.
No.
Oh
my gosh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so what does ministry look like now for you guys? What are you guys up to? You shared a little update on Sunday. You could share a little bit about that, but then what else are you guys into right now?
Right, currently my world is very, very academic. It's a little bit dry, perhaps, for a podcast. So
I'm like super interested.
Yeah, but you do have like YouTube videos and things like that that people could go watch. Because I've watched your videos on like how you do some of your translation work.
She's
and
good
stuff.
At those.
So,
yeah.
If you want to watch the YouTube videos, you have to sign up for our newsletter.
That's great.
I think they're private because we do have to be careful because translation teams are in areas where like. You say, like, they'd be socially ostracized, but, like, you don't get the sense of it, like, here, because you could live your life away from your extended family here just fine.
Yeah.
But if you're socially ostracized in some parts of Asia, like, there goes your water access, because you're no longer allowed at the public tap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's just a whole other level of dealing with social pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have to be careful about making videos public or so I get to help with I shared a little bit about my main role on Sunday where I get to help with translation teams sorting out some of this discourse analysis level issue. So you have like you got word choice issues, you have grammatical issues, and then you have like properly structuring a text, with an intro and like how you connect the sentences. So it's like grammar issues, but like that span multiple sentences.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
I want to challenge Pastor Darren to a sermon just on the word this.
Ooh,
nice.
Or that. I'll do a video. I will publicly call you out.
like how to deal with an object or.
So you've got like the word this or that, and you can have like physical distance, but this or that can be used to talk about something now or something like that thing that happened. You have like temporal distance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you're figuring out antecedents or whatever it might be that come up.
Oh,
and
then then there's like, is this referring to the thing you just talked about, or is this talking about the thing you're about to talk about?
That's exegetical work too, but you have another level of it when you're thinking about like.
So some languages don't use it the same way. Like English has a lot of the logical reasoning that Greek has, but some languages will be very specific about words that they can do that with.
Okay.
Ooh.
So.
Yeah,
super interesting.
Yeah, Jono just made the
airplane over the head thing.
Yep.
No, but he said at the beginning of our marriage things would go over his head and he'd
I'll try to understand it. A lot of
hand whoosh over the top of his head, but now
he just dodges
the
it.
Hands coming out of his head and he moves his head out of the way. He just like
whatever. I'm gonna go backpacking.
Yeah, that's right.
That's cool.
But while we're in Chiang Mai, I teach incoming translation students. So maybe they've had a degree or like a career in a different field, and then they're coming to translation. And so I need to catch them up really quick on all of the linguisticy, like even just sound production, like what all is going on as you're producing sound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get to show the laryngoscopy. I don't know how to pronounce it. gross them out with like all the like MRI images and you're like tongue moving and
like how the motor does the thing and
that's
stuff.
Crazy
that's
yeah.
crazy
so yeah. much fun yeah huh. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. Yeah, so then you can say what you're
Jono?
Up to.
Yeah, yep, I
have a few hats. One of my things I do right now, I'm in kind of like the director of YWAM Chiang Mai.
Cool.
And we have 46 different ministries doing multiple things for both Thais and Myanmar and a few of the other closed countries. Safer not to mention them
there
too much.
There you go. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm kind of helping some admin, which is rough for me. Okay, some admin.
I would have guessed you weren't an admin person. I just would have guessed that.
Yeah. Like, Lord, I'll do this because I love you. So I do. I'm doing admin for the YWAM Chiang Mai. I'm kind of the switchboard. Plus, I'm in charge of the outreach department with my dad.
Cool.
Getting teams, and we get out on average 119 teams per year, and
not including COVID years.
COVID years. I was like, "What's happening?"
Yeah,
and now teams are coming in. They're streaming
coming again
like crazy.
This is just YWAM teams from around the world. Is that right?
YWAM and churches.
As a home base, if you will. Okay.
Yeah, cool. They come and stay there. We just send them to different places. Whoever
needs
help.
Yeah.
Different locations have been asking us, please send us teams. Then I'm in charge of Bible distribution. So I get Bibles and we just plan where it goes. And I'm a volunteer pastor at a church / children's home of kids at risk.
Wow.
Some kids were trafficked. Some were in danger of being trafficked. And the church kind of houses them, takes care of them.
That's awesome.
Everything.
Thai kids.
Right? Well, they're not Thais. They're hill tribes. So in Thailand, they have the other tribes. Thai is a tribe, right? And then they have the Akka, Lahu, Lisu, you name it, all of these different tribes. And a lot of times they're kind of ignored by the Thai government. Mm. Yep. Some of them don't have, they have no citizenship.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Even though they've lived there, right? And so we have to try to give them citizenship so they can have a future. Even
man
in society,
yeah, in society. So that's kind of the stuff that we help with too. So
that's amazing.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. That's interesting because you're in such an academic but like important, useful, like top level thing, and you were like hands on the ground, like in such a way.
Yeah,
that's interesting that you kind of have an outlet for both sides of ministry in that. Well, what are you guys excited about right now? And then how can Imprint Church pray for you as you're doing what you're doing?
What are we excited about?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's something that's cool that's been happening. So in Thailand, I'm sorry, I'm getting excited about this.
I can tell. Your posture changed.
He moved forward. Okay. Yeah.
So in Thailand,
you can adjust your mic a little. Yeah. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding.
So in Thailand, we've had missionaries for 280 odd years, right? Uh-huh. And the Thailand still is 99% Buddhist. Mm. Now, what happened recently, like during the beginning of COVID, some random guy, new believer, mechanic, he just fixes bikes. He was just reading his Bible, Book of Acts, and he read like, okay, they went and shared the gospel. He's like, looked up and he saw this one guy. He's like, I'm going to share the gospel with this guy. So he went and spoke to this guy and he started sharing the gospel with this guy. This guy then said, oh, that's wonderful. Can I get baptized now? He's like, yeah. So they start walking towards a river that's 15 minutes walk away, right? On the way there, people keep stopping them. Okay, what are you guys talking about? What's happening? What's happening? And he did the whole thing, another message to these guys. Ended up baptizing 1,300 people that day.
Oh, my gosh.
This has never happened.
Oh, my gosh.
He went into a village nearby. Same thing happened. 800 people got baptized.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he kept doing this. And other people, like the missionaries, went like, what did you do? He's like, well, I read the Bible. The Bible said go speak to people.
So I talked to someone and then we started walking. Yeah.
Yeah, right? So because now they realize
we got to make a model out of
we
this.
We have to do that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? We have to. How do we teach this? Right?
Yeah, exactly. How can we part? Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway. I know. So we then have been. Now, because of COVID, a lot of the people have been, like foreigners like me, Koreans, Chinese, who usually are very on point, they want to evangelize, were kicked out or chased out or prevented from entering villages because they are very fear-based. Mm. But Thais could keep going, and they knew that the gospel has to be preached.
Cool.
And now, for the first time, Thais are on the foreground of evangelism.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It was always like, oh, no, the Westerners or the Chinese or the Koreans, they'll do it, right? Yeah, and the Chinese would always step back. Huh. Now the Thais are actually like leading.
That's amazing.
That's unbelievable.
This is the first time. So I'm excited
it's
about
like the
this.
Lord is pouring out his spirit on that happening. Yeah. That's
God
amazing.
Is doing something.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Sarah, what about you? What are you excited about and how can we... I guess at the end of that, how can we pray for both of you?
Don't laugh. You have an amazing role.
You do.
You're thinking it's nerdy, aren't you? Yeah, is that what you're thinking?
I'm going to teach a mega workshop.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
That is gospel work.
Cool stories about evangelism.
No, this is how the dude got his Bible, right?
Yeah.
True.
This is how a Thai person heard the gospel and is now the one who's leading the church.
That's right.
Totally.
Because there are people like you. Yeah.
I need prayer. In May, we're going to possibly be leading the biggest workshop like I've ever seen of this kind, like 12 different language teams in the same location is crazy. Like 5 to 6 language teams, like it can get out of hand with like you're trying to like answer all of their questions and look at their individual language and figure out what's going on in it. So to have we did one that was 8, and that was a beast. So this is why I'm a monster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's potentially a monster workshop. So that's we're trying amazing. To like round up all the troops for this one.
That's rad.
Yeah.
So it's we also need prayer because I understand like some of the translation teams. You thought this was a little strange, but sometimes translation teams will have unbelievers on them because there's not enough believers to translate into that language. Like they just don't have any.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they just grab people who are language experts and just go. Yeah.
Yeah. So the tricky part is when it gets like if it's dangerous for a certain people group because there's so many different. I don't know. People are just coming from such different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. If in a certain region it's dangerous for someone to be a Christian, but then over here you have someone who's a non-Christian participating, and oh, they know all your family members because like the town's only so big.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting to see how that goes. But I'm really excited, but also kind of scared at the same time.
Yeah.
And it'll be the first time we've taken our kiddos, our two little babies, we've taken them on a trip to America now.
Yeah.
It'll be the first time we've taken them on a trip to a rougher place. So they've been living in Chiang Mai, very comfortable.
Yep.
So now if we take them to Nepal, it's very dusty, very rough.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like we've already caught so many bugs just in America. Can we deal with a third countries?
Yeah.
Colds and sniffles and oh my goodness. So it's not easy on the lungs.
Yeah, totally.
That city.
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll put some show notes or something, Rex, that we can put up.
Yeah.
They'll have your link to connecting with you guys too.
Okay.
And I would encourage you in Print Church to like now pray for the Dupree family. Is it Dupree or Duprees?
Dupree.
I've called you the Duprees because I've only Dupree because
there's
I only
more
see
than one
them.
Of us.
Yeah,
it's okay.
That's true. It worked.
Yeah.
Linguistics.
So, that's right.
You did
that's
it.
Right.
Yeah. Well
so,
done.
Thank you. I did that naturally.
I
How
know,
amazing.
That's yeah. impressive.
So I would encourage you to pray for the Dupree family. And
yeah, and follow them and, you know,
yeah,
so you
chase
can learn
them
more.
Down. Like, we'll put some links for you to kind of connect with them. If you want to connect with them personally, please email them. Please support them if you want to financially as well. We
would
encourage
that. We would encourage
that.
You to do that.
It'd be wonderful to see your involvement in their lives. Our Imprint Church supports them financially, and we're glad to do that. And so, we are grateful that you guys were here and hung out with us.
This is really encouraging. Thanks for talking about God's faithfulness and huge things and small things and, all of that. I love
we've been learning
one.
Lessons on God's voice, and that's pretty cool. That's good stuff.
Yeah,
dude, it's so rad. We belong to a God who speaks.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. He's very relational.
And like your training and scholarship is like an image of that in some ways.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really cool to see the dynamic with you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited. I have questions for you after
Of course. We'll get into the weeds. Seriously, thank you guys so much for your time. We're so grateful for what you're doing for the kingdom and what you're doing for the sake of the gospel in Thailand. It's just amazing. So
and beyond.
Yeah, and beyond. So that's it for now. Again, check out show notes. Reach out to us if you have any questions, anything like that about getting in touch with them or supporting or following along on what they're doing. And if nothing else, pray for them. Pray and pray for what they're doing and for the stuff that's coming up and for the spread of the gospel in Thailand. Yeah. We'll see you next
week.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah.
Bye.
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 Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.